True Crime Radio is brought to you by DBI Media, FetLifeRadioStation.com, and Prison Production. This episode is produced by Joey DeVille, Dawn Michelle Chamberlain, and executive producer, Pulitzer Prize winner, Suave Gonzalez.
You know, so how did you dealt with that and still maintain your dignity, your peace, without punching one of these motherfuckers in the face?
It looks like going into the bathroom stall, head down between my legs and crying in my own lap.
How many nights you cry in the halfway house?
Probably every night.
Was you crying out of anger or you crying out of doubt?
I was crying out of doubt. Absolutely. Absolutely crying out of doubt and fear.
So even though you had a job, a good sustainable job.
Yep.
You still had doubts.
I still had doubts.
You still had fear.
I still had fear.
Fear of what?
Fear of failing. Fear of not being able to grow any further. Fear of being stuck in confinement again. This time not in the institution, but this time in this job and this career. And it made me again reflect on the choices that I made, the poor choices that I made to get into that position, because now I'm like stuck.
So you really thought that having a job was like in confinement?
Absolutely. Without having choices of jobs, because just because I have my credentials, I still have a white collar crime as an offense. And sometimes people look at you worse than they look at somebody with a manslaughter charge when you have a crime of a financial crime. And I kept saying, fuck. I fucked myself. Like, I was still reflecting on the poor choices that I made to get me to where I was. And then now, there. I was pretty hard on myself. I was pretty hard on myself. I was just, felt really bad, really low about that. Even in that happy moment, even in that moment of pride, there was still a lot of doubt. Because I'm stuck now. What the fuck did I do? Degrees or not, I still felt like I wasn't able to maximize them to the fullest potential. I wasn't able to get the opportunities like I probably would have been able to if I hadn't made those stupid decisions.
Did you think that your family were looking at you different? That you was in a halfway house, like all your kids, mommy's a criminal. You know, did all that came through your mind?
I definitely disgraced the family. And I felt like I disgraced the family, and I felt like they
But had they ever tell you
that way?
Had they ever tell you, mom, you disgraced us? Did your kids ever tell your mom why you did that? Oh, mom, I'm ashamed that you're a criminal.
So I can't say that they came right out and said that directly. And honestly, I feel like they probably had a number of discussions or family meetings behind my back where they were told what to say and what not to say, and being extra sensitive to your mom in the situation. Because they're my children, they don't want to hurt my feelings. And a lot of stuff they would say was, mommy, I love you no matter what, and I love you anyway. And a lot of letters that they wrote reflected that same message as well. And they were proud of me no matter what. But there was still that me, in my own way, in my own head.
You was in your head.
I was in my head, creating a scenario to make it something different than what was right in front of me. They're saying they love me. They're saying they're proud of me. So I'm making up. Oh, somebody coerced them. They rehearsed. They don't feel it. No, they got it. You know, it was me again. Me. Me, me, and more me.
So, did you ever have a conversation with them? Like, you know, mommy did this. Was you honest with them about what you was doing and what line you in the federal system?
Oh, absolutely. But I had to wait to the very, very last minute to tell them, and I told them separately.
After or before you came
before
home?
I went in to prison, I told them.
How old were they?
So again, the investigation was a long time. So I remember mentioning to my oldest children, because I have four total, I have two bonus sons and two sons that I birthed. I remember mentioning to my oldest bonus son, you know, the police are investigating me for my business. Just so you know, they're all in the city or in the community, you know, because it's a small city, so it's flies like wildflowers. And I didn't want him to be embarrassed or get into fights or anything from catching flack from peers and whatnot. And he's like, oh, okay, but he didn't really ask any questions. And he's kind of like that anyway. Some time goes by, and we were able to kind of keep the kids out of it. And then one day, the shit hit the fan, and what I wasn't prepared for happened. My first son that I birthed, but he's the third, comes home from school, and he says, Mom, I got in a fight. He had gotten a fight off the school bus. And I'm like, well, what the hell happened? What's going on? You know, he's like, the kids were teasing me on the bus. I said, well, teasing you about what? And he said, your mom going to jail. Your mom about to go to jail. Your mom stealing people money. Your mom going to jail. And I'm saying to them, who's mom? My mom's not going to jail. You don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what you're talking about. So then he said a student, you know, pulled his hair. He had braids at the time. So he pulled his hair and they got into a fist fight on the bus. And then the bus stopped and everybody, you know, got put off the bus. And him and his friends, you know, they walked their way, and then the guy made him walk the other way. And I remember, you know, as he's telling me this story about getting into this fight and what the people were saying and how he felt, and I kept saying, oh, shit. Fuck! I gotta tell him. I gotta fucking tell him. I was not prepared for that. I was not prepared for the kids on the outside. Mind you, these are like sixth graders. They're like, I think my son's like 10 or 11 years old. I wasn't prepared for that. So I knew I had to tell him, and I had to tell him the truth and tell him quickly. So I had to sit him down. You know, I said, you know, son, I'm sorry that you had that altercation. You know, I don't teach you to engage in, you know, fighting. You know, it's only, you know, for a defense. And it definitely sounds like you were defending yourself, especially if the child pulled your hair. But I'm sorry what you were defending yourself about, because they were bad-mouthing me, your mother. And son, I'm going to have to be honest with you. They were telling you the truth. He's like, well, what do you mean, Mommy? I'm like, I am in some trouble with the law for my business. And part of the punishment for the trouble I'm in could and may very well be me going to prison, going to jail. Mommy, what?
Which son was this?
That was my son, Brennan. That was my son, Brennan. He was, like I said, about 10 or 11 years old at that point, maybe sixth grade.
I mean, as a mother, hearing your son say that, how did it make you feel?
Broke my heart.
In what way?
It broke my heart because I realized at that point that I failed him as a mother, and that's how I felt strongly, that I failed him as a mother. A mother's job is to be, first of all, a caregiver, a provider, protector, a positive influence. And I had failed him in that because I wasn't being a positive influence. And the caregiving and providing was getting ready to end because I was going away. So now I'm taking that away from him. I'm being removed from their life. And I didn't think about any of that. Any of that. When I was doing what I was doing. Like, it never crossed my mind. So I was heartbroken. Disappointed in myself. And again, I felt like I disgraced my entire family. I didn't even feel worthy of even being their mom at that point. I just was at a very low place. I just felt so bad. I was just like, my kids deserve better than this.
Describe that low place you was in.
That low place, it's pretty dark. It was quiet. Quiet to the world around me and the outside, but noisy in my head. Noisy in the sense of every negative emotion, every negative thought that you could possibly think of or imagine about yourself and myself was scrambling through my mind. And it took over me. I couldn't function. I was numb. I was present and not present. I lacked any other emotion. It was just blank, like a flat line. I couldn't think straight. I couldn't get anything accomplished. I didn't even want to show up for myself. Even when I was at places that I showed up for, I wasn't in the present. I really wasn't there. There was a huge disconnect. It was a lot of emotions. A lot of days where I was just crying a lot. Then some days I would be agitated and angry. Get moody, be mean, nasty.
Have you ever thought suicide?
I can't say that I thought of suicide. I'm going to be honest with you. I never thought about ending my life. And that's because you need a lot of courage to do that. And I didn't have that. I wasn't built like that. I didn't have that kind of courage. I was a coward. I was a wimp. I was a liar. I was a fraud. I was a cheat. I was a scumbag. I didn't have any courage. Piece of shit. I wasn't an honorable person. You need courage to commit suicide. It takes a lot of balls. I wasn't built like that. I was too weak.
Everything you describe is, it's fucked up.
Yeah.
But at the same time, everything you describe is everything you need to go from a cell to CEO.
Yes.
Because you gotta have the courage.
Yes.
You gotta have the ball.
Yes.
Sometimes you gotta be that scumbag.
Yes.
Motherfucker, like, I'm gonna do this and I don't give a fuck who's standing my way.
Yep.
Like, so it's like the reverse.
The reverse.
Of everything, how you felt is everything you need to go from a cell to CEO.
CEO. Yes.
You know, but I just wanna go back to that. Cause I know that when I went to prison.
Mm-hmm.
I was 17.
Okay.
You know, and for years I always felt I let my family down. I got a brother, top cop, in the police force in New York. Out of my family, there's only two of us that ever been incarcerated. That's my sister that passed away in Delaware, and me. And it's like, then I let my family down. Mm. Let them down.
Mm-mm.
You know, my brother, that's my brother. But that's like my cousin. My mother raised him, but that's my, we say we brother, but that's my cousin.
Right, it's your first cousin. Cousin brother.
You know, so technically, my sisters only got one brother, biological brother. That's me. I let five sisters alone in the world.
Mm-mm-mm.
And I always felt like I let them down. Especially my sister that was an addict for years.
Mm.
I always felt like if I was home, that would never happen. You know, and when I was in prison, I always thought about that. And part of my transformation was to show them the image that you have of your brother is not the image that I want you to have for the rest of your life.
Right.
You know, so, and even now, when I came home, my sisters, all my sisters were alive. And they was like, you change. Because I went to prison in the 80s and I came out and my sisters were still living the same lifestyle. It was like they never changed with time.
Wow.
It was like I stepped back into the 80s. When I went to prison, my older sister was smoking crack. I remember that in the Bronx when it first came out. When I came home, she was smoking crack. She was 58, was smoking crack.
Do you feel like their lives went on hold when yours did? Because I felt like that.
I do feel like that.
I felt like it was a domino effect, what I did. Everybody was fucked up.
Well, in my case, it was. Because before I went to prison, we was a tight family.
Mm-hmm.
After I came home, it was like I don't even know them.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of people always think that you go to prison, you do the time, it don't affect nobody.
Right.
Your incarceration affect an entire generation.
It affects
of people.
Everybody. Yes.
Kids, grandmother.
Yes.
You know, because people that depend on you can no longer depend on you, whether it's for the good or the bad.
Right.
You know, and with me, it affected me emotionally to this day because I never had the chance to be there for my mother when she got sick. I never got the chance to see my grandmother buried, none of my oldest siblings buried, or those they passed while I was in prison. You know, I went to a funeral of one of my loved ones, which happened to be my niece in Delaware that got murdered, and my sister. Those were the two funerals I've ever been to as an adult.
Wow.
For a family member. You know, so yeah, it affected me to the point, but I wondered, if I wasn't incarcerated, but I still had the same emotions.
Well, you know, for me, I didn't realize the domino effect. Like I said, and you know, once you're in it, you're in it, and there's nothing you could do about it, but you're stuck. But the power of the trauma I created was unbelievable to me.
I mean, was it trauma you created, or was it trauma that was passed down to you from your siblings and you just passed it down to your loved ones? Because a lot of time we didn't create the trauma that we live or suffer. It was passed on to us.
There was traumas that was passed down, yes. But then I created a new layer of trauma. And in my selfishness, selfless behavior, you couldn't tell me that that's what I was doing. In my arrogance and my ignorance, with my head so far up my ass, you couldn't tell me that what I was doing would negatively affect my family members. And it wasn't just for that short amount of time. It's still there now. It still continues on now.
How so?
We're still recovering from the trauma. We are still trying to reconnect. We're still trying to learn how to trust. We're still trying to be a healthy, functioning family unit. And it's very hard to do that. I was playing catch up, right? I missed that time. I created this domino effect of spiraling, you know, emotions and behaviors from everyone collectively. And I'm trying to make up for all that last time and still be in the now. And it's fucking hard as shit. It's almost impossible.
Do you find yourself doing things for your family? Wondering if I do this, they probably forget about what I did in the past?
Absolutely. At first, I thought that the way to redeem myself with them was through material things. Get them gifts, take them on plates, trips, do things, shower them with, you know, attention from material items and things as such. And even overexerting myself to do things for them, I was running ragged. Like, I was overdoing the most, if you will, to try to redeem myself and get good in their grace because of that guilt that I carry. And I had to learn to stop doing that. I had to learn that my past doesn't define me now, and that we have to accept what was done, move on, and build from that. And I can't keep allowing, because it was a point where, you know, the kids would take advantage, and other family members would take advantage of that guilt. And I fell right into it because I felt so guilty. And I had to, again, have the confidence to be fierce through my failure and pull myself out of that matrix, out of that abyss. And to be honest, you would think that it was all happy moments, you know, the reunification and the reconnecting, but there were days where I felt just as depressed as I did when I was in that lowest point. Because again, I felt like I was in a cell. I was a slave to my guilt and to my family members and my children. I could not break free. And I felt like anything that I did or did not do would have a domino effect on them emotionally. And I couldn't tell them no. I couldn't tell myself no. I couldn't show up for me like I wanted to. I wasn't still in a cell. I was still in a cell.
Are you in that mental cell today?
No, I am not.
Have you ever found yourself in that mental cell from time to time?
With my children or just in general?
Just in general.
The cell never goes away. The cell never goes away. It's always present. It's always there. You just have to know how to navigate in that space and how to manage it, and not let it consume you. Be able to identify that, in fact, what that cell is. And once you can identify, which comes with self-accountability, then it's easier to navigate. It's easier to navigate. But it never goes away. That it never goes away. It's always there. It's always there.
It's a day now. I mean, because I'm looking at you and you're tearing up. Never seen you like that in a while. You
know? I know.
You're tearing up. And I kind of can sense that you were in that zone. What are you thinking? You know, are you thinking about your victims? Have you ever put yourself in that cell again and think about your victims? The ripple effect that your crime created.
Absolutely. And that's why I get so emotional about it, because it weighs heavy on me to hold myself accountable. Is a big deal. It's huge. And it's a lot of people can't do that. And to be able to hold myself accountable, I have to live in my truth.
Which is?
I was a monster.
Describe that monster.
Selfish. Selfless. Greedy. Lack of empathy. Condescending. Controlling. Ruthless. Savage. Neglectful. Irresponsible. Adulterous. And an addict.
An addict to what? Addicted to what?
I was addicted to the attention that I was getting, the power that I felt.
When you say attention, do you think that that attention comes from the lack of attention you got from your dad?
Not only did it come from the lack of attention from my dad, and that's a very good point you just made, it also came from the negative attention that I received from my mother.
Describe that.
So what we didn't get a chance to talk about early on was the effects of my father's addiction and the new dynamic that it brought to the household. And with my mother, it did something to her mentally and emotionally. And it made her bitter. It made her angry. It made her non-productive, which also reflected on us, that energy. But then it made her abuse us emotionally, physically. So my mother used to beat the shit out of us. My mother used to beat the entire living shit out of me and my sisters. And the angrier she got, and the more crazier things got in the household and in the marriage, the more we seemed to suffer. And she would try to conceal it in ways of, like, to justify the beatings as discipline for various reasons, but the anger, the hurt that I saw in her with every strike, with every punch, with every blow, you knew, you could feel it. You knew that that was coming from somewhere else. And it's like, Mom, stop. Please stop, Mommy, stop, please. Bitch, I'ma kill you, I'm a fucking bitch, I'ma kill you, this, I'm the motherfucker. Mommy, no! Then my sisters are screaming. Everybody's screaming because we never knew who was gonna get it. Sometimes everybody would get it, sometimes the one person would get it, whoever did whatever they did. But we knew that that was getting ready to happen. And then you learn how to kind of navigate your life around that to avoid to do things that would create the fighting and the conflict in the house and the abuse. So again, that attention that I didn't get, all you ever want. My father was distracted by his addiction, and that took first place in his life. and anything associated with his addictions. And then my mom was in such a dark place and so miserable that it made her into another kind of monster. And the attention just wasn't there. It wasn't healthy attention.
So you had to go out. So as a child, did you get the attention? Do you think you got the attention you deserve?
No, not early on, yes. And before my grandmother transitioned this earth, yes. Because she kind of mediated and also made up for the neglect and the lack thereof. So she made sure that we still had things and did things, and she would pull us out of the environment as often as she could. But then once she left, my dad's addiction got worse. And my mother's mood episodes and crazy abusive ways got worse. And no, the attention and the support that I really needed wasn't there. That she would put on for the city. It was a big front. But really, what was going on behind closed doors wasn't what was being presented.
Was you ever abused as a child?
No sexual abuse, just the physical abuse and emotional abuse. Yeah, and emotional abuse, yeah.
Have you ever abused your child, your children?
Not physically. But again, when I was in that place, that monstrous place, I was me. I was neglectful. I was an abandoned, absent parent. I was ripping and running, carrying on that criminal lifestyle, and I wasn't present. And I wasn't emotionally invested. And that is abuse. Yeah.
That was another episode of Get Your Shh Together featuring Dawn Michelle Chamberlain. Tune in every week on FetLifeRadioStation.com or go to all platforms. We appreciate your support and we hope to see you next week. True Crime Radio is brought to you by DBI Media, FetLifeRadioStation.com, and Prison Production. This episode is produced by yours truly, Joey DeVille, Dawn Michelle Chamberlain, and executive producer, Pulitzer Prize winner, Suave Gonzalez. Until next time.